You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hello, welcome to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. This is Gary Bauer, and this podcast is a weekly product of the James Dobson Family Institute. Dr. Dobson's goal and our whole team's goal is to arm you and give you the facts you need to defend the things that we love and that we hold dear and that we honor. And it is a time we're living in where we need that more than anything else. We live in disturbing and shocking times. I think we would all agree on that. All around us, there's discord and division and even actual violence. And I know there's growing fear. I hear from people all the time that are deeply worried about the future, worried about the out-of-control crime on our streets. These are difficult, challenging times. You know, 70+% of the American people think the country's headed in the wrong direction. That's an amazing figure. It's in itself, that's in some ways historic. There's always issues in one generation after another, but this generation seems to be facing some really big things. Sometimes you open the newspaper and you look at the headline and you wonder if it's a Babylon Bee headline. That can't possibly be true. And it's hard even to, you know, use irony and to make fun of what somebody might do and say, because by the time you get it up online, somebody has actually said what you thought was insane. The other thing that I think is amazing and actually fairly depressing, when I was growing up, my father, who was a janitor, he had no doubt I was going to have a better life than he did. I mean, he just told me, study hard, you know, do all the things you have to do. You'll live better than this. Well, now, for the first time, I believe, ever in our history, Americans say that they doubt their children and grandchildren will have a better life than the life that they did. That is depressing. This is supposed to be a shining city on a hill. How did we get to this position? And, you know, all of us, I think particularly Christians and Christian conservatives or conservative Christians, however you want to think about it, I think all of us have a sense that our freedom is under attack, freedom that's been taken for granted for a long time. We see these stories about pro-life people that demonstrated outside of an abortion clinic a couple years ago, and their home gets raided now and they get arrested by the FBI. Really? The FBI doesn't have anything better to do than to go after pro-lifers that got into a shoving match with somebody outside an abortion clinic? We see this event that happened not long ago, but it happens really almost every week, where a respected federal judge goes to Stanford University Law School, probably in many ways one of the best law schools in America, and he can barely give a speech. He's shouted down. And you all, if you followed this story, there was a member of the Stanford University administrative leadership there, a person that you would think, well, she's going to bring order. She's going to tell the students, watch your step. If we can identify you, you might get kicked out of school. No, she eggs them on. She joins them in berating this respected federal judge. The list just goes on and on. And of course, the big issue that everybody's talking about is, are we losing the equal protection of the laws? You know, in America, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, whatever you are, you're supposed to be treated the same way when you go into the courtroom. That's why Lady Justice wears a blindfold. She's not supposed to be able to know anything about the defendant other than the facts of the case. And all these things that we're seeing appears to suggest that there's a growing body of evidence that there's two views of law that's beginning to predominate in our courts. So looking at all this and seeing the same things that you're looking at and are worried about, I started thinking about another very mercurial time of great turmoil, and that was the 60s. Now, as much turmoil as that was, I don't think it matches what we're going up against now. But it was a time of, you know, great division. And of course, you can't think about the 60s without thinking of Martin Luther King Jr. And so I started going back and looking at some of his speeches. And one of the speeches just that just grabs you by the heartstrings, and I find it even now hard to process, is the last speech he gave on April 3rd, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. It is just an historic American speech. Now, in my view, it ought to be taught in every high school, every college and university in America. But by the way, when I was doing this, maybe it's just me, it doesn't appear to me that we're paying as much attention to Martin Luther King as we used to. In this speech that he gave on April 3rd, 1968, at the time I'm talking to you in this podcast, that was 55 years ago. I mean, I would have thought that it might be marked. There might be more articles written about it. Maybe some excerpts played on some network TV. Unless I missed it, I didn't see any of it. But I went back and looked at that speech, and the thing that jumped out at me was maybe an explanation of why particularly the left doesn't pay as much attention to Martin Luther King. And I think the reason could be that, first of all, it is obvious he loved God and he loved Jesus Christ. He was a serious Christian. And he also loved America. There's no doubt about it. He was disappointed in America, but as he said, you're disappointed in something or someone you love greatly. That's what causes your disappointment when it doesn't live up to what you hoped. So he loved Christ and he loved America. Well, you know, today, if you make it obvious you love Jesus and you love America and you think God's hand was in the founding of America, they call you a Christian nationalist. And that sounds like a very bad thing. I don't know who thought of that, but I don't like it. I think it might intimidate people that love Jesus and love America to not make that clear. You know, I can't find any evidence that Martin Luther King ever attacked the founding fathers. I can't find any evidence that he ever disrespected the national anthem or took a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance. I can't find any speech where he said, you know what, those founding fathers, they were all slavers. Follow me. Let's tear down their statues. Nope, that's not what he did. And he didn't do it in this last speech in Memphis, Tennessee. Quite the opposite. He praised America, and he said to the audience and to the rest of America, I want the promises of America to include me and my people. I want you to fulfill the promises of the founding and fulfill those promises to Black men and women. So here's one of the parts of the speech that in some ways it sounds like it's written right now, because he refers to communist China and to Russia. Now listen to this. He says, all we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. Well, what's he talking about? What paper? The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. Be true to what you said on those papers. And then he makes this observation. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal things that are being done to us to try to shut us up. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges, because they, meaning Communist China and Russia, they hadn't committed themselves to that over there. Wow. I mean, I don't want to make anybody angry, but that sounds like something, you know, you hear some pretty controversial people saying in America today, including a very well-known former president of the United States. And then sort of being a little bit sarcastic, he said, but somewhere, again, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, But somewhere I've read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read about the greatness of America, that the greatness of America is the right to protest for the right things. Wow. I wonder if Martin Luther King were alive today. I think he'd be astonished, because when he was saying this, he saw that everybody else had the freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly, the freedom of all these different things, but Black men and women were being denied those things. What would he say today, when I think millions of Americans of all races, particularly if you're sort of orthodox in your religious faith, are feeling that you're being denied your freedom of speech, your freedom of assembly, the freedom of the press? I think Martin Luther King would be furious to see that happening today. Well, the end of the speech, of course, is, it's almost too impressive and a little, I don't want to say scary, but Martin Luther King appears to predict his own death. You know, I know Christians argue, you know, is prophecy still a thing today, or was prophecy limited to the Bible? I don't know. I'll let the theologians debate that, but this sure sounds prophetic to me. I want to read it to you because I find it not only prophetic, but it is an antidote, I believe, to something I'm really worried about, which is that people like you and me are going to become afraid of what might happen to us if we keep fighting for the rights that Martin Luther King was so committed to. We must not do that. We must not allow fear to take us over. We must not cower in the face of the things we see today. Well, as I get ready to sign off here, I want to share with you, in his own words — he was a great orator — the words he said in his last speech on this earth.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
What powerful words. As we just finished celebrating Easter along with several billion people around the world, it's a good time to remind ourselves, He is risen. He is risen indeed. See you next week.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.